Hi, my name's Ryan. I've been a supporter of Paul's for many years now. I wish to get the podcast and video creation part of the system we call Paul back up to full speed. And I think Patreon support is a big part of that system. Go over to patreon.com/PaulWheaton. Make a pledge for each artifact that Paul creates. Again, the site is patreon.com/PaulWheaton. You can also find the link in the podcast notes. Enjoy the podcast.
All right, the numbers are going.
Cool.
We're gonna talk about the casserole door on a batch box rocket thingamabob. And we got two rocket thingamabobs that use the casserole door. One of them is the Cyclone rocket mass heater in the red cabin. And the other one is the rocket cooktop in Allerton Abbey.
Correct.
Okay, so Jennifer's here with me. Let's see. First of all, to talk about the one in the red cabin really quick, apparently like three of the glass lids have broken there, and apparently one of them broke very recently. So Josiah, we've got the videos out about the surgery with that one, and it was working great, and then the lid broke.
Right.
And so you know, part of this is that it's kind of like, all right, we've got the batch box rocket mass heater in the classroom, and that one has a proper door, but it took like a week to build that door. It's got a proper door for
right.
it. And for a long time, for like a couple of years, it did not have a proper door, and that was a disaster. And this is one of the things I object to about rocket, but the batch box style rocket mass heaters, is that so often they don't have a proper door. So we kind of thought the casserole door idea was brilliant. Now, Allerton Abbey. We already recorded a podcast about the annualized thermal inertia tests, and that this year the best test we can do is a series of indicative tests. And now you're probably in the middle of the most important indicative test of the winter, and that is that you just completed 10 days of holding the temperature, or getting the temperature up to 80 or higher.
Yes.
How long did it take to get there?
It took about a week of ramping up to get it to 80 the first time. And then the goal was to touch 80 for 10 days in a row.
Okay.
And that didn't actually happened, sort of. There were 2 days where it only got up to 75 during a 12-day period.
Okay.
So there were 10 days where it touched 80, but they weren't all sequential.
The fact that it took 7 days until you could touch it kind of shows the mass sucking the heat out of the room.
Right.
Charging itself to get to this point. And now we're going to start the 10 days of not doing that. And, of course, as part of the attempt to get the temperature up to 80, basically you use this rocket cooktop, which is not a heater.
Right.
It's not designed to heat the space at all. In fact, it's designed specifically to not heat the space.
Right. It's designed to move the heat out of the structure as quickly as possible, because you don't necessarily want to heat your home up a lot every time you cook a meal.
Right. Although maybe that should be a change eventually, depending on how things go.
Right.
Because part of it is like, if, like, let's say it was set up to be a heater, like we're going to extract all the heat out of it that we can before exhausting it outside, then the entire structure would effectively absorb any excess. So you wouldn't accidentally heat the house up, which is what for most wood stoves, most wood cook stoves, then you're trying to get the heat out of there as quickly as possible.
Right.
The ox style fireplace, which is that box. It looks like a box. It looks like just a rectangular box of bricks, and you got a fire in it. It's designed to carry the heat outside, but you use it for cooking.
Right.
And so it's extremely inefficient at heating a building. So maybe, depending on how things go, maybe, you know, the variation needs to be something where it goes ahead and harvest as much of the heat as possible before going outside.
I definitely agree with your conclusion after these last couple weeks. You're not going to accidentally heat up the structure. The mass definitely eats the heat that you put into it.
Have you ever been to a party where there's like, I don't know, 40 people in a small place?
Sure, and it's sweltering.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that it would be like if the temperature inside Allerton Abbey starts off at 70 and you brought, I don't think you could get 40 people in Allerton Abbey, but you might get 25 standing around.
Right.
And if in a regular structure of that size, it would become far too hot in half an hour. But in Allerton Abbey, you could probably go 4 hours, and at the end of the 4 hours, it would still be quite comfortable. It would not be too hot.
I suspect that you are correct. I can't imagine it overheating in the length of a normal party. Yeah.
All right. So now let's talk about the casserole door. Now,
right.
The first one was the cob was shaped to fit the first one perfectly.
That's correct.
And it sat there perfectly. It was a match made in heaven. And what happened to that one?
It sort of just spontaneously shattered during the operation of the stove as we were bringing it up to temperature. Not during this test, but during one of the previous attempts to charge the mass to do an indicative test.
Okay. So, you heard something, like you heard a pop.
Right, right. A pop and a series of clinks.
And so when you went over there, did you see shrapnel stuck into the logs and shrapnel in the ceiling and probably some small children cut to shreds?
No. In fact, it was the blast radius, so to speak, was a few inches away from the door.
So more like it kind of popped and fell.
It was somewhere, it was like a little bit of a projectile falling. Like it mostly fell with a little bit of pressure behind it.
More, rather than kablooey, like
right.
A grenade, it was more like a,
yeah. Okay. Exactly.
All right. Because we keep saying explode when we're talking
right.
about privately, but I think that's mostly for comedy's sake.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. It exploded! and it's kind of like it really didn't. It kind of cracked and then fell out.
Yeah.
Maybe it projected itself 2.5 inches. But that's kind of like the same area where it would just fall out.
Right, yeah. It's like hard to tell if it maybe, you know, poofed out a bit, or if it just fell.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll try to use babies in the future to just set around it to see.
To see if we can
really
get
some... know the test.
I still put my face right up next to it, so I'm not overly afraid of the, like, shrapnel projectiles.
And for the casserole door, that is a really beautiful thing. I mean, you can
right.
really see the fire. It's really it's really nice. And of course, most wood stoves that I've ever used didn't have any glass in the front. Didn't have any
right.
glass at all. They were just all cast iron. And in order to see the fire, you would have to open the door.
Right.
All right. So number one, it was just sitting there minding its own business.
Right.
You were sitting over on the other side of the room minding your own business. And it committed suicide,
yes.
so to speak. Now, we have some speculations on what actually happened, but we'll come back around to those speculations.
Right.
So, you put another door in there, but it didn't quite fit.
Well, actually, we went through 3 of the doors that were...
Spoiler alert. I mean,
okay,
I was doing
sorry.
Something here.
Well, okay, I apologize.
Okay,
so,
number two,
it did fit. It, in that it was the same size and shape, like made to fit the same casserole dish
okay.
as the first one, but it hadn't been cobbed specifically to fit, so it was a little bit of a tighter fit.
Okay. All
yeah.
right. All right. And then how did it die? Now that we know that it died.
Oh my gosh.
Spoiler.
It died during Operation of the Stove again, when the temperatures were up quite high, but in this case it was as I was trying to get it off. The glass had expanded as it heated up and sort of lodged itself into the opening.
So you grabbed hold of the knob and it said no.
Exactly.
And you said yes. And you basically won the argument, so to speak.
Well, I did. I won the battle and lost the war.
Okay. All right.
I got it off, but only in pieces.
Okay. All right. Damn it, Beavis. Okay. So, number three?
Number three...
didn't fit as well.
It did not... it was kind of the same scenario as number two, but it also spontaneously committed suicide.
Like you didn't touch it.
It just, yeah.
It just biffed on its own.
Exactly.
Okay. All right. Number four.
You know, we're starting to get into territory where it's not entirely clear to me exactly which doors did what. They all start to blend together.
Okay. These first three.
Yeah.
They were the clear glass.
Right. And they were the correct fit.
So they
the
may
correct
have been,
type.
They may have, because immediately I could hear 900 people on the other side of this podcast saying the word borosilicate glass.
Yeah.
And it's like, we don't know.
We don't know.
It was
if they
either
were...
soda glass or borosilicate glass.
Right. We got them from Goodwill. They were clear. They were, you know, quote unquote Pyrex, but that means what it means.
Sure,
yeah.
Whatever. Oh, Pyrex, all caps. Pyrex, lowercase.
Right.
Who gives a shit?
Yeah.
Okay, so moving along, eventually, one of the ones...
So then we went through a couple more clear glass ones that were poorly fitting. They more or less did the same thing. One of those spontaneously committed suicide a couple hours after the fire was out, which was a bit of a different scenario, which we suspect has to do with the way the glass cooled, but we'll get into that later. And so ultimately we tried... an amber glass lid. Is that where you're going?
Yeah. And so then this is referred to as ceramic glass. It's I've looked it up like three or four times. The first time I looked it up, I could have sworn that it was designed to withstand temperatures exceeding 10,000 degrees Fahrenheit. Later research showed that it was designed to withstand temperatures of 1,400 degrees Fahrenheit.
Right.
Now, an interesting thing was that both soda glass and borosilicate glass are designed to withstand temperatures of about 340 degrees. And you would think, well, I thought borosilicate was supposed to handle much higher temperatures.
Right.
The difference between the two is that borosilicate glass can better deal with expanding and contracting suddenly than soda glass. Soda glass will break easily with like little changes in temperature.
Yeah.
And so that's why borosilicate glass can withstand higher temperatures, but really still not that high. Okay, so we got the amber glass one and...
so the amber glass one also died at the end of a very hot, the hottest day of operating the stove. I'd been feeding it kindling all day from, you know, dawn to dusk, and it was about 8:30 at night when I was finally about to get it up to 80 when it died. And at that point, like, the door was really hot. Like, I was using a doubled up welding glove, and in the time that I could stick one piece of kindling in there, it was burning me through the glove. Like, it was really hot.
Mm-hmm.
So the amber glass lid did break. It broke in an interesting circular pattern. It was more like the middle of the door broke out as opposed to shattering into lots of shards, which is what has happened with the clear ones.
Okay.
I've only broken one amber glass one, so I don't know if that's just some weird fluke or if it's a quality of the glass. Who knows?
Okay.
But it did die. At exceptionally high temperatures.
Now you only tested.
I only tested one, and that one broke.
Okay.
So it's
so far in our test, it has a 100% failure rate.
Right, but okay. Our sample size is one.
Yeah, it's a pretty yeah. So, and what happened after? What was next?
After that, I started using some small, ill-fitting ones that were clear. Those were what we happened to have in the garage. And just kind of putting them on there crookedly so they were air-cooled. But, like, there was still a... It sealed the opening enough for the stove to draft well.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I mean, part of the whole design of the batch box...
Right.
Is that there's an air intake that is very precisely sized.
Yes.
So you're going to make for an incomplete burn.
Right.
Which could lead to bigger problems.
Right. And, you know, it was kind of like that was what we had to work with.
Okay.
We've ordered things from the internet. They don't fit the opening. It has to be recobbed, but the cob is frozen.
Yeah.
Stories.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So it was kind of like, well, I've got to put something on the front of this thing because it's on fire.
Okay. So, you were up there trying to make things warm with all of the scraps of materials that you had.
Right.
Josiah was down here and telling me about, like, the update, including the amber glass breaking.
Right.
And so we had a talk, and we tried to think of some possible solutions, and we came up with something for you to try.
Right.
And as I understand it, you now have one whole day in of trying this new idea.
Right.
And that idea is?
A cast iron skillet, essentially modified to be the door. And we built a little, you know, edifice of bricks around the air intake so the air intake will not be blocked, and just kind of set the cast iron skillet on there. Eventually, we'll, you know, recob the opening and put a handle on it and stuff to make it look nice and work better. But for now, we just needed something to fully block the door and leave the air intake open.
Okay.
And in my one day of operating it, it seems to work well. I mean, it does get hot. You still need the welding glove. Cast iron is a conductive material, but yeah. It hasn't broken, and it seems unlikely that it will break.
Right.
Because it's cast iron.
I was kind of thinking that it might not be a bad idea to drill two holes, like maybe quarter inch, maybe smaller than a quarter inch, near the handle.
To cool the handle?
It would not only cool the handle, but it would kind of give you a little bit, like angle it in such a way that you might, if you got up near the hole, you might be able to look through the hole and
right.
get an idea of what's the fire status.
Well, one thing about the double shoebox at Allerton Abbey is it has the ram's horns, which not only can you see that from the top of the stove, but there's actually perpendicular to the top, there's a small viewing window.
Okay, now this is the perfect time. Let's talk about that glass. How often has the whole top exploded?
Never. And I don't know what that glass is or if you can get lids made of it, but I wish that you could because it gets far hotter. We've used the little heat gun thermometer, the point-and-shoot one, and gotten well over 1,000 degrees all the time.
And we have a special, you know, there's those point-and-shoot thermometers. We paid like 10 times more than everybody else to get one that I believe it goes up to 1,800.
Yeah.
I think most of those point-and-shoot thermometers only go up to 600 degrees.
Right.
So, yeah, that one's extra fancy.
And, I mean, we got those temps. We only tested it when we were just doing a normal meal, which the door doesn't even get hot. If you're cooking just a normal meal, if it doesn't
right.
burn long enough. So I have no idea what the temperatures get up to on the cooktop glass surface during these burns. That would be an interesting thing to test. But
it would
very,
have
very
been.
Hot.
Yeah, it would have been an interesting thing to test.
Except, yeah.
Now didn't. We're going into the cool phase.
Yeah, exactly. Let's but they it definitely gets hotter on the cooktop surface than the door does. And so... whatever that glass is not shattering at much higher temperatures than those that the door is breaking at. So.
Which is, and that top, that cooktop is just, we got it off an electric stove top.
Right.
It was junked.
Yeah.
And so we just stole it. And it's been cut to be a smaller size for our needs, and part of it was part of the leftover that was cut off was used to make a little window towards the front so you can kind of really see the ram's horn action,
right, which is where I was going with this. At least at the Abbey, you don't really need a viewing port in your cast iron door because you can see how the fire is doing through the viewing window, but maybe for the Cyclone, if we end up doing it there, that would be a good idea.
So now my understanding is, so the Cyclone currently does, I think the Cyclone's been through three casserole doors.
Okay.
And I understand that at this moment it does not have a door. And so we've got to get in there and repair it.
I haven't really been involved with the Cyclone drama, but I suspect that if it did have a door, it would have been cannibalized for my stove by now. So I think you're right.
Okay. All right. So now let's talk about what's happening. And I want to point out that when the casserole door idea was first introduced, Matt Walker replied to that thread.
Right.
And he said something about how when the lid is hot, that no matter whether it's soda glass or borosilicate glass or the amber glass,
right,
it can only handle so many little tinks. And then it breaks.
Right. By tinks, you mean small impacts, correct?
Right. So, like, if you're putting the lid onto the pot that it's designed to go with, there's a little tinking, you know, as you're putting it down. Not dropping it. Nothing.
Right.
Nothing
dramatic.
Yeah. Just normal use.
Right.
Like, it'll be able to do a certain number, and then it's done.
Okay.
And that's what he proposed 2 years ago when we first brought the idea up.
Right.
And then I think that before you arrived, we had gone through three lids on that rocket cooktop. And so that would mean that that particular rocket cooktop now has probably eaten, because you've probably gone through six.
Yeah, five, I'd estimate seven. I remember five of them, and then they all blur together.
Okay, all right. So maybe a total of 10 lids have been consumed by this.
Right.
So now, of course, you know, everything we're doing here is oodles of experimentation, which sometimes is fun and sometimes is an enormous pain in the ass.
Right.
And everything takes slower because we're doing things so weird that it's not like there's anybody who's an expert at doing this.
Right.
And so there's a lot of this kind of thing going on. So I think some people come and they get the experiences, but after a while they get kind of wore out on a life of experimentation.
Right.
And then there are some people where it's like, oh no, I'm cool with this the rest of my life. This is where I need to be. So this is yet another experiment. Now we have a huge podcast. I believe you were telling me earlier it was three parts. It was me and I think Mud was there and Donkey was definitely there. No, Donkey wasn't there.
The three-part podcast I'm talking about, which I think is called, like, Uncle Mud on Rocket Mass Heaters or something of that nature, is just you and Mud.
Oh, okay.
Y'all talk about Donkey. He was at the event.
All right.
But it's just you and Mud in the podcast, or Chris McClellan, as he's otherwise known.
Well, and then I know that there was one that was recorded, like, a little over a year ago. And it was, I know Donkey was definitely there. I think Mud was there. I think Ernie and Erica were there. My memory's a little foggy, but basically it was like, let's talk about how precisely Batchbox sucks.
Oh yeah, I listened to that one too. Yeah, I think it was Donkey, Ernie and Erica. I don't think Mud was in that one, but he might have been.
Yeah, right.
It's been a while. Yeah.
So, I mean, The number one reason is that, like, it takes you 2 days to build the rocket mass heater, and then you got to add 5 more days to build the fucking door.
Right.
And it's kind of like, that's a big negative. Yeah. Whereas with the J-tube system, it takes you 2 days to build the rocket mass heater, and your door is 2 bricks.
Right.
That took you, like, what, 10 seconds to move them from over there to over the J-tube? Now you're set.
Right.
And, so anyway, that podcast, long, long list of reasons. But then, of course, we came up with the casserole door.
Right.
But it's kind of like, for a while there, when the first one, you know, exploded.
Quote unquote.
Yeah. Quote unquote. I got to be careful using that word, but it is funny to say it. when the first one exploded, then it was kind of like, all right. Was it a fluke?
Right. Is
it? And then we kind of got the idea, maybe that was soda glass and we need borosilicate glass. And then after we went through enough of them, it's like, okay, surely at least one of those had to be borosilicate glass. And it's like, okay, time to switch into the amber glass.
Yeah.
And then, and now the amber glass has failed, but now granted it was put through some extremely high temperatures.
Yes.
But even still, I mean, it's possible that, because we talked about, like, we're using this in a way it's not designed to be used.
Right.
We're trying to heat the structure instead of heating food.
Right.
But then we talked about it, and it's kind of like, well, what if it's canning day?
Right.
You might run it all day then. Now, of course, you might, if you take a rocket mass heater and you fill it full of kindling over and over and over and over and over and over and over again, that's getting it to be the hottest it can possibly be.
Right.
But then if you put in big chunks of wood, it runs less hot. Now, if you're canning, and we kind of threw this out there,
yeah,
it's possible that you want to get that water boiling fast.
Right.
Then you open it up, which kind of cools it off.
Yeah.
And then you want to get it boiling fast again.
Right.
Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Yes.
So it's plausible that you might try to maintain an overly high temperature for an overly long period of time again.
Right.
And so it's like, all right, so this extreme is not a fluke.
Right.
It's something where the whole system should function with this kind of extreme happening.
Right. Well, and one of the doors did break. It didn't fall off and then break or anything like that. It was sitting in place on the stove several hours after the fire had died. And so it broke at a low temperature, which my hypothesis was that there's a differential cooling between the inside of the door, which is still being heated by the stove, and the outside of the door, which is exposed to the colder air in the room, and like something with the expansion and contraction caused it to just kind of spontaneously die.
I would think it would be a difference between the expansion and contraction of the glass and the expansion and contraction of the cob.
Well, this one was not a tight fitting one, so it wasn't like being squeezed by the cob or anything like that.
Oh.
It just kind of, and so I started, like, once the fire had died, I would take the door, like, over somewhere else so that it would all cool at kind of the same rate rather than one side being exposed to the fire. And, I mean, that did seem to help maybe, but only one of those doors ever failed that way. So it's kind of like, you know, maybe the devil was in it. I don't know. I got nothing.
I gotta make sure that I've properly qualified. Matt Walker, in his post about the glass, he did say that here's the door that he designs, and it's really simple and quick.
Right.
And so that's what he said. I think that the design of the door is such that the door itself is bigger than the hole.
Right.
So then all of the hardware that holds the whole door together,
yeah,
is less exposed to the heat.
Right.
And the only thing exposed to the heat is the glass that is like on the cooktop.
Right.
And the Dura board, that ceramic fiber board.
Right.
And that's all that's exposed to the fire. All of the other hardware is not exposed to the fire. But of course, and the other thing that he's doing is that he's got a bunch of metal going into the brickwork.
Right.
And so then it's kind of like all the mortar is attempting to hold that metal in place while the door is open and closed. So I'm kind of curious. Here it is 2 years later. I kind of wonder how it's held up because I am concerned that the mortar would have suffered for all of that. And that the bits of metal holding the door will have become loose.
Right. That makes sense because the metal is going to expand and contract within its little mortar home.
Not to mention just the jiggling of the door.
Of the door, yeah, that's true.
And I didn't, and I also looked at it and I kind of thought, okay, for Matt Walker, that's simple. But I imagine it still took him, like looking at it, I'm thinking like, there's probably the better part of a day, maybe not in a whole day, but for Matt Walker, maybe the better part of a day in building what he had there.
Right.
Is my guess.
Well, and I think the modular door is really a valuable thing. Like to be able to go and buy, I mean, we're talking about this one eating through 10 doors. That's one, like maybe $5. You know, they're 50 cents at Goodwill.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
There's that aspect. And then there's the fact that like you just shape with your fingers some cob and stick the door in there. It's pretty nice compared to having to weld something up, you know, make something custom.
His didn't look welded. It looked like he was using pop rivets.
Okay. Yeah. But even so, it's...
Right.
Yeah.
No. And I'm kind of thinking, like, for Matt Walker, the better part of a day. For somebody else, it's probably going to be a couple of days.
Right.
And I kind of... And this is Batchbox. And there's other problems with Batchbox we talk about in that thing.
Right.
And it's like, you're not Matt Walker. Now, of course, Matt Walker's got plans.
Right.
And you can follow his plans. And you probably have, you know, much better success. Of course, I think when you buy his plans that he'll like give you advice and stuff like that too.
Right.
So probably a pretty good chance of success down that road. However, that whole podcast about why Batchbox sucks.
Right.
All right.
Oh, I just remembered one other way that one of the doors died, which sort of supports the thermal shock hypothesis, that it's not so much the heat as the sudden cooling, which is for one of Josiah's videos, we were going to clean up one of the doors and stupidly ran it underwater.
While
it was still pretty hot. And of course it shattered into a bunch of pieces.
All right. Yeah. Doy.
Yeah, no, totally. It was like one of those, moments where you're just not thinking. But yeah, so that one.
And then one of you turns to the other and says, let's not tell Paul. And then we make a podcast and you forgot about that agreement.
No, we replaced that 50-cent door out of our own pocket.
Okay.
At one of our Goodwill trips.
Okay. All right. I think that the casserole door project is done. I don't want to do that anymore.
Right.
Once the amber one broke.
Yeah.
It's like, no glass is going to make it.
Right.
I think we've got pretty conclusive evidence. I mean, for a while it was worth trying, but I think that it's all over.
Yeah.
No more glass lids.
Right.
Now, if we could somehow come up with something that's the glass.
Like the cooktop. Yeah.
But, I mean, that would, if we got that, that'd probably be flat. I'm not sure how we would do that as a door.
Then you'd have to cut it and, yeah, it would remove the nice, handy, you went to the thrift store and bought this thing and stuck it on aspect of making the door really easy, like DIY level one.
You could do something where it's a rectangle.
Right.
And the hole is round.
Yeah.
And the bottom, and it slopes in. It mm-hmm. leans in like it currently does.
Right.
And then on the top of the rectangle, like there's a good 2.5-3 inches of cob and glass contact, and then a good inch of open air above the glass.
Okay.
and a little kind of curved shelf at the bottom to hold the glass.
Right.
So then what you could do is you could pull the glass out while it's still sitting in its little cradle at the bottom. So you just grab the top and lean it out.
It kind of hinges out
on those. Kind of hinges, kind of, sort of.
Yeah.
And then you could shove the wood in.
Yeah.
And then just lean it back in. And then if you wanted to, you could, you know, like with your welding gloves or with a hot pad or whatever you're using, grab the glass and lift it and set it aside.
So I want to warn people when you just said hot pad, because we literally incinerated a hot pad.
Made of wool. Yeah.
It caught on actual fire. Ooh, just from touching the door.
That proves that the door temperature had to be at least 1100 degrees.
Yeah.
Because my understanding is that the ignition temperature for wool is 1100 degrees Fahrenheit.
Oh, okay. That makes sense. Yeah, we're slowly disintegrating it for a while. It was charring, and then at the end it caught on fire.
Yeah. Sighting.
Yeah, it was. And I threw it in the ash bucket, and then I think that's part of what set off the carbon monoxide alarm. But anyway, that's another story for another day.
I mean, there were people that were kind of like, oh, the carbon monoxide alarm, but it's kind of like, yeah, you're going to have the carbon monoxide alarm go off if you're burning something in the house.
Yeah, it was not intentional, but yeah.
It's like the whole time the rocket cooktop is running, the carbon monoxide tester's there like, testing, 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 and everything's fine for months.
And I have a note on that, which is that this time, in which nothing was caught on fire in the Abbey, the stove was put through its paces to a much greater degree than before, and the carbon monoxide alarm read zero every time I checked it for the past 2 weeks. We never got any carbon monoxide reading in the structure.
Cool.
So it seems to have been from accidentally catching things on fire.
Right. There you go. You know, so don't do that. I'm glad we had this chat.
I'll do my best.
Yeah. And I'm glad the carbon monoxide tester was there.
Yeah. Thank you for that.
So, all right. I think that we're done here. Is there anything else? I think we covered it. Basically, the glass door as these kind of pot lid shaped doors. I think that it's a universal fail.
I think we've got to pull the plug.
I'm going to recommend that nobody do that.
Right.
And there's still room for that glass from whatever the type of glass it is on that cooktop.
Right.
You know, that's a possibility. But I think that for now, I think let's do more testing with the skillet.
Yeah, door. I think the cast iron door has the potential to be, I mean, a little more expensive, even if you're getting it secondhand, but the same kind of modular plug and play aspect to a degree as the casserole lid. And I mean, I don't know if I'd go so far as to say like no one should ever do the casserole dish lids. If you just have a box of backups, I wouldn't just.
I think wasting glass like that.
I agree with you, but if you're broke and the Goodwill has like, you know, 18 lids with no casserole dishes to match them, I don't know. Okay, Paul's making a face.
I do get to decide for here.
Sure. Oh yeah. No, I'm
and
just saying for
you
like
could
people.
Say for your scenario, right. And I'm going to push it out and say, I'm going to discourage people from doing this anymore.
I would agree with that. And I would say, like, if you have built one and it does have a casserole dish lid, have a couple of backups on your shelf so you don't end up with, you know, no door while your fire is burning.
And then start shopping for that, you know, cast iron pan.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. I have a lot of confidence that the cast iron pan is going to work out really good.
It seems really promising to me.
I can't. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah. I know that cast iron can break and crack, but that's under some pretty extreme conditions.
Right.
I don't think we're going to have this problem at all.
Yeah.
I think it'll be great. Anyway, all right. That's our transition. And then the other thing is, I think we got to stop building batch box stuff.
I don't have a horse in that race. I'll let you argue it out with other people.
Yeah. I think
that there's a lot of, I mean, rather than fucking around with this door shit.
Yeah.
I would rather that our time and resources were put into many of the other experiments that we're currently in the middle of doing.
Right.
So, I mean, we have tons and tons and tons of other experiments. And I mean, I would say the number one problem for people coming here who are keen on experiments is when you start to get an idea of the list of things that have been tried and the list that's 1,000 times bigger of the things that we wish to try next.
Right.
That when you look into the abyss, it can kind of, you know, be a little overwhelming.
Right, right.
But I think that this is a problem that a lot of people suffer from, and that it's like they get to a homestead and there are 800,000 things I want to do on the first day.
Right.
And then after a year, you're kind of like angry with yourself because you only did 200 things.
Man, I have felt that feeling. But yeah, I think the other nice thing is at least here there are other people who are also either doing part of the list or helping you with your part of the list.
Yeah.
Whereas if you're on your own homestead, it's you and, I mean, maybe your partner or your family or something. But
I kind of get the impression that a lot of people, it's just you.
Just you. And then,
even if there's family there.
Right. Well, and half the time, the people around you.
Does that garden go through Domino's? I'm not sure how this works.
Right. You know? Well, and sometimes it's not only that they're not helping, but they're holding you back. Like, you want to do one simple thing and you have to have 18 conversations and you go to the hardware store and they try to force feed you Roundup or whatever. And it's just really frustrating. So here, at least there's like forward velocity pushing the experiments forward. Which
and
is
everybody,
really nice.
Everybody's helping you. You're, you're not swimming upstream. You're going with the flow.
Exactly.
And it's like if you ever hit a bump in the road, 7 people show up to help you over the bump.
Exactly.
You know, as opposed to like if you're at home with a family that's fighting you and everybody else is fighting you and you hit a bump in the road, that's a lot of times that's the end of that experiment.
Right. Well, so much of your mental energy and stamina go into fighting the current as opposed to, you know, solving the actual problem that you're trying to solve. And here it's the opposite. People are just kind of pushing you forward.
Yeah.
It's really nice.
I think another thing is a lot of times you're going to be on a property like maybe 3 acres and you're going to be fighting your neighbors.
Oh, yeah.
And they're going to be calling the department and making you sad. And it's not like it's not like you're hurting them in any way.
Right.
It's more like they're bored or they've learned that you vote for the wrong people.
Sure.
Or you dress funny.
Well,
whatever. You know, this thing where you're bitching about them spraying has them
pissed off. Well, I was going to say, I mean, my last property was 550 acres and my neighbors were actually really nice people, but they would like help me by spraying our fence lines and thought they were doing something really nice, like, oh, look, we're maintaining the fences and stuff like that. And so it can be a hard row to hoe if the people in your area are not on the same page with your values in that regard.
Right. Which is why we got a property that's at the end of a road. And
totally.
And so then that way it's like, you know, very few people can see what we're doing. And so therefore, very few people can be offended.
Right.
And or another thing is that they're just curious about what's going on.
Yeah.
But they're not going to trespass.
Right.
But they could call the Department of Making You Sad and they'll go onto the property and find out.
Right. Totally.
You know? And then you'll know.
Yeah.
You know, and it's kind of like, so just plain old curiosity, but not a wholesome, healthy kind of curiosity.
Yeah.
It's more like, I want to fuck up your shit, but I don't know what to call that. So I'm, you know, So, all right. Casserole doors, generally out. You're kind of thinking like there could be a case. I'm going to still discourage it. I would, I think the cast iron door could be better, but what's 20 times better? J-tube.
Right.
I mean, the upsides of the batch box, are amazing, but the downsides, in my opinion, outweigh the upsides.
Right.
J-tube is, I want to see us do more experimentation in the world of JTube, and let's leave Batchbox behind. That's my thinking.
Right. I don't have strong opinions. I haven't built either of those systems from scratch. I've just been operating what's here, but, I mean, we're going to be doing the Rocket Sauna pretty soon, and that's going to be a JTube. We're going to stick with that. And, you know, maybe in a couple of years I'll have stronger opinions on Batchbox and argue it out with you. But for now, I'll just say, sure, Paul, you're the expert. I agree with you.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm the one that has to make decisions about all these things.
Yeah.
Being, and, you know, I think another thing is I see stuff about, like, I saw a YouTube the other day where somebody said something like, we took out our Rocket Mass Heater because it didn't work. And I kind of thought, well, what did you do wrong? And they're like, well, right, I followed Ernie and Erica's book. And I kind of feel like, you know, Ernie and Erica's book is great. I kind of feel like we cover a lot of stuff in the videos that are not covered in the book.
Right.
And then plus in the podcast, there's a lot of stuff that's not in the videos or the book.
Now, when you say the videos, do you mean the Better Wood Heat DVDs?
Yeah. The 8 DVD set.
Okay.
You know, and so, I mean, 8 DVDs is a lot, but I mean, hell, you know, you're going to go out and watch the Game of Thrones. I mean, how many DVDs is that?
Right.
You know, so it's, and I kind of feel like, you know, I think we do a good job. I think it's interesting. I don't think it's boring.
Right.
But anyway, the key is it's kind of like, what was wrong with that system?
Yeah.
And I know that there's one where I saw where somebody's like, oh, I had a Rocket Mass Heater and it was shit. I took it out. And Ernie commented.
Right.
Ernie was watching it with me and he says, that guy's a dumb fuck. I saw what he did and he did all these things wrong. And he's like, oh, and he also decided to innovate along the way.
Right.
Like, I've never built a Rocket Mass Heater, but I'm going to make and this is the one that Ernie and Erica and I always go to, I'm going to make the riser horizontal. That'll be more efficient, you know, and it's like hot air goes up.
I mean,
and
yeah, it's
up.
Literally called a riser. You would think that would, but
so,
yeah.
Innovation before even building one. And,
right.
And so I don't know what they did, but, the important thing is that we have, probably 15 different rockety things, maybe even more than 15,
right,
that are working great.
Right.
That are being used regularly. The one in here, the Rocket Mass Heater in here, we've been using it throughout the winter this year and many winters before. This is probably its fifth winter,
right,
where it's like the dominant heat source. I think there have been a couple of times where we went somewhere for a week, and so we lit the propane heater cover for us, like we set it to 55 or something like that.
Oh,
while
yeah,
we're gone.
Not this winter though. It's
this winter. It's been used all winter long.
Yeah,
and it's like when we open it up to clean it out, it looks brand new on the inside.
Right.
You know, and so it's like I think this thing's gonna go 50 years.
Yeah.
And so we've already gone through 5. So I don't understand how anybody could be like, oh, they don't work or whatever, or this person saying that theirs didn't work. I have no clue what they did wrong.
Right.
And I kind of feel like the other thing is, like, you can go buy something brand new. I believe that a conventional wood stove now is like a couple grand, isn't it?
It's yes. And if you want an attractive one, they get higher than that. I was looking into them a few years back just for my kind of deer hunting camp because I thought it would be cool to have one, and it's off grid, and I was like, no. They're incredibly expensive.
Speaking of which,
yeah,
you're from Texas.
I am.
And this is Montana.
Yes, it is.
And we just finished what we call January.
Uh-huh.
And now we're into February.
Right.
All right. So, how are you holding up?
You know, there have been some days where I was cold outside, largely because my wardrobe is designed for Texas.
Yeah, that.
And there's been a little bit of a learning curve trying to get all my gear straight for working outdoors for 8 or 10 hours a day here. But the buildings have been very cozy. The rock, particularly this one, the Fisher Price House, which has a Rocket Mass Heater in it, has been really lovely.
Well, and yeah, I kind of feel like Joss and I are sitting on our asses most of the day and typing.
Right.
And so, you know, we're looking for a certain level of heat.
Right.
And but I would say throughout most of the winter, we have a fire every other day.
Right.
And now when it starts getting like during the daytime, it stays below freezing, we'll probably do a fire every day.
Right.
And if we've been too lazy and the temperature in the house has gotten down to 61, we might run a fire for 4 hours.
Yeah.
But usually it's an hour to an hour and a half.
Right. I feel like you a lot of times we'll like light the fire on our lunch break and ask you to kind of close it down, you know,
right,
as it dies, and it'll go for a little over an hour.
Right.
Is about what usually happens. But yeah, no, I was definitely one of those people you joke about that thinks that Montana lives under like a 30-foot block of ice all winter. But it's been a lot more manageable than I predicted. Yeah. It's been pretty good.
Yeah, your coat is weird. In fact, everywhere you go, there's like these little poofs of, I don't know, the innards of your coat.
Down. Well, those
is
are
it
my.
Down?
It's down. Well, those are my backpacking clothes.
Okay.
Because I didn't really have, those were the only cold weather clothes I had were for backpacking, but they're pretty delicate. Like they're not really work clothes. So they've got a lot of tape on them now.
Yeah. So, I don't think you could repair it. I don't think you could sew a whole clothes. It's, I think tape is your only option.
Right. I mean, you can, I have sewed up some of the holes, but they just rip again so easily that it's like not really worth it. I just shove the down back in there and stick some tape on there and it works.
The big thing is you're used to Texas heat.
Yes.
And, and here we are deep into the winter of Montana.
Right.
And, it's like turning out to be not that big of a deal.
It's not that big of a deal. We totally need to work out an indoor willow feeder. That's my only plug.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I think that if we can, you know, get the boot camp good and full.
Yeah.
And we're talking about how now that we've got some boots that have been here for so long, we could add a couple more boots to the whole program.
Yeah.
And so it's like, imagine that. I mean, I think the forward velocity would be much bigger. And I'm, you know, would you, so if somebody's listening to this now and they're contemplating being in the boot camp, you know, my understanding from talking to you is that you believe that you've built up a lot of worthwhile experiences. It's been worth it.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's definitely been worth it. And I mean, I came from a place of managing my own property and doing my own thing back in Texas, which I think is a little bit the opposite of what a lot of people do. But I've still learned a ton of skills that were completely outside my wheelhouse here. And just being a part of a community that's moving in the direction I want to move has been really amazing.
Yeah. Such a difference.
Yeah, it's a big difference. I was definitely in the swimming upstream scenario back home.
Yeah.
So being here has been amazing. And Fred, who...
Soul building. In fact, that's...
Soul building, yeah.
So yeah, like if you're doing it by yourself, especially if family's fighting you...
Yeah.
That is soul draining.
Totally.
And after a while, you're kind of like, why the fuck do I even bother?
Yeah.
And here, it's like paradise every day.
Absolutely. Well, and I had like certain kinds of homesteading skills. I mean, I was growing all my own food. Plus, I was running a successful ranching business. But like a lot of the natural building and the Wofati stuff and just cold climate stuff, I had never touched. I'm from the humid subtropics. Yeah. I hadn't done anything with rocket mass heaters or anything like that. So being here has just given me, you can learn pretty much anything you want to learn here, I would say. Like Fred has an incredible knowledge base and somebody will be interested in it and want to work on it with you, even if it's not incorporated into official boot camp.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So I believe that someday the boot camp will shift and we'll charge money for it.
Right.
But first things first, you know, we got to fill it first.
Totally.
And keep it full. All right. We got to wrap this podcast up. This is supposed to be a short one.
Sorry.
Yeah. All right. If you like this sort of thing, come on out to the forums at permies.com where we talk about rocket mass heater stuff, homesteading, and permaculture
all the time.
Don't forget, Go out to patreon.com/PaulWheaton and make a pledge for future artifacts.